In truth, nothing of much eternal value comes without a struggle.
This is Mission 66, taking you through the Word of God from the ministry of Bible teacher and pastor, Dr. Luis Seau. In partnership with Transworld Radio, Mission 66 is produced and heard around the world in several languages. Let's hear from our teacher, John Matthews, and his co-host, Esther Sisulu, as they start us off today in our survey of God's Word.
Thank you for joining us today as we continue our look in the book of Nehemiah. Now, Nehemiah was the one who rebuilt the wall of Jerusalem after the Judeans came back from the Babylonian captivity. And as we join our teacher, John Matthews, he'll provide insights into chapters 6 and 7 with the theme, High Walls Against Low Schemes.
Esther, thank you so much, and a very warm welcome to Mission 66. Wherever you're joining us from today, it is so good to have your company and indeed to be with you. And as Esther said, yeah, we're going through Nehemiah, this guy, this Judean who had come from captivity in Persia to rebuild the wall around Jerusalem. Now, that wall had been torn down by the invading Babylonians many years before, when the people had been taken into exile. And Nehemiah, he's facing challenges right there amongst his own people. He's had to step in and compel the rich nobles to stop charging exorbitant interest on their own people and not enslave their children. They were having to do that in order to pay their debts, to sell them into slavery. And we also explored the issue of debt as well. And now we encounter the matter of the wall itself, which was indeed the main project in this book of Nehemiah. Now, why was it so? Well, without a wall, Jerusalem was vulnerable. The wall had been destroyed and they were vulnerable to their enemies and thieves around them. And indeed, as it showed here, some of the enemies are already plotting and scheming how to stop that work from going ahead and indeed going forward as it had already begun. Chapter 6 and 7, then, of Nehemiah. Let's see what happens. Now, when Sanballat and Tobiah and Geshem the Arab and the rest of our enemies heard that I had built the wall and that there was no breach left in it, although up to that time I had not set up the doors in the gates, Sanballat and Geshem sent to me, saying, "Come, and let us meet together at Hakkaphirim in the plain of Ono." But they intended to do me harm. So I sent messages to them, saying, "I am doing a great work, and I cannot come down. Why should the work stop while I leave it and come down to you?" And they sent to me four times in this way. I answered them in the same manner. Boy, isn't this great focus from Nehemiah? Clearly understands the mission. He's got a project to do. It's placed on his heart by God. He knows he's got to rebuild the wall to defend the city of Jerusalem according to God's will for his life. Now, in such circumstances, with plenty of opposition and plenty of issues around him, you might have thought that Nehemiah would lose a little bit of focus, perhaps become distracted by those secondary matters, fail to achieve the ultimate goal, lose sight of it. But no, Nehemiah remains steadfast. He's moving forward despite any obstacle. And here you've got request after request after request after request. And he says no. And these are not just polite invitations on the part of Sanballat and his associates. They are outright attempts to hinder God's work. Nehemiah sees straight through their deceitful intentions. Indeed, on their first time of asking, he sees that they intend him harm. And then verse 5 says that in the same way, Nehemiah says, Sanballat for the fifth time sent his servant to me with an open letter in his hand. And in the letter was written, "It is reported among the nations, and Geshem also says it, that you and the Jews intend to rebel. That is why you are building the wall. And according to these reports, you wish to become their king. And you have also set up prophets to proclaim concerning you in Jerusalem. There is a king in Judah. And now the king will hear of these reports. So now come and let us take counsel together." Then I sent to him, saying, "No such things as you say have been done, for you are inventing them out of your own mind. For they all wanted to frighten us, thinking their hands will drop from the work when they read these words, and it will not be done. But now, O God, strengthen my hands. And then when Sanballat and his allies, they failed to entice Nehemiah to this meeting, and indeed they failed to distract Nehemiah from his mission, they now resort, look at this, to threats and slander, claiming that he intends to revolt and make himself king. And verse 10, Nehemiah goes on to say, "Now when I went into the house of Shemaiah, the son of Delaiah, son of Machetabel, who was confined to his home, he said, 'Let us meet together in the house of God within the temple. Let us close the doors of the temple, for they are coming to kill you. They are coming to kill you by night.' But I said, 'Should such a man as I run away? And what man such as I could go into the temple and live? I will not go in.' And I understood and saw that God had not sent him, but he had pronounced the prophecy against me because Tobiah and Sanballat had hired him. And for this purpose he was hired, that I should be afraid and act in this way and sin, so that they could give me a bad name in order to taunt me. Remember Tobiah and Sanballat, O my God, according to these things that they did, and also the prophetess Nodiah and the rest of the prophets who wanted to make me afraid." You see what happens when we have the wisdom that comes from God. We see things as they truly are. And Nehemiah sees clearly here what is happening. God has given him the ability to know exactly when he's being lied to. And God is the one, the only one that we can trust to give us ultimately the right information about our salvation, about eternal life. And so the work on the wall, it goes on, it proceeds with all speed. In fact, we see remarkably that the project is finished in just 52 days, less than 2 months. And verse 15, Nehemiah says this, "So the wall was finished on the 25th day of the month Elul, in 52 days. And when all our enemies heard of it, all the nations around us were afraid and fell greatly in their own esteem, for they perceived that this work had been accomplished with the help of our God. Moreover, in those days the nobles of Judah sent many letters to Tobiah, and Tobiah's letters came to them. For many in Judah were bound by oath to him, because he was the son-in-law of Shechaniah, the son of Ara, and his son Jehohanan had taken the daughter of Meshullam, the son of Berechiah, as his wife. Also they spoke of his good deeds in my presence and reported my words to him. And Tobiah sent letters to make me afraid." You see, there were some in Judah who had intermarried with the daughters of Tobiah, one of the men who was opposing the building of the wall. And so Tobiah was about to ease himself into a position of influence in the city. That will be another problem that Nehemiah will come across in the future. But now we come to chapter 7 and Nehemiah establishing a chain of command. This is him speaking in chapter 7, verse 1. "Now when the wall had been built, and I had set up the doors and the gatekeepers, the singers, and the Levites had been appointed, I gave my brother Hanani and Hananiah, the governor of the castle, charge over Jerusalem, for he was a more faithful and God-fearing man than many. And I said to them, 'Let not the gates of Jerusalem be opened until the sun is hot. And while they are still standing guard, let them shut and bar the doors. Appoint guards from among the inhabitants of Jerusalem, some at their guard posts and some in front of their own homes. The city was wide and large, but the people within it were few, and no houses had been rebuilt.'" Isn't that interesting that The passage there lets us know that the people of Judah had paid far more attention to the building of the wall than they had to even building houses for themselves at this stage. And it also shows that once that wall had been erected, their main job was to guard the city well at this stage as well, and only open the gates during daylight to keep out anyone who shouldn't be there. And as we move on in chapter 7, we have more lists of people. In verse 5, Nehemiah says, "Then my God put it into my heart to assemble the nobles and the officials and the people to be enrolled by genealogy. And I found the book of the genealogy of those who came up at the first, and I found written in it, these were the people of the province who came up out of the captivity of those exiles whom Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had carried into exile. They returned to Jerusalem and Judah, each to his own town. And they came with Zerubbabel, Jeshua, Nehemiah, Azariah, Remiah, Nachamani, Mordecai, Bilshan, Mispareth, Bigvai, Nahum, Bana." And it also lists the number of the men of the people of Israel, which were the remnants of the northern kingdom at the time of that Babylonian captivity. It also lists the priests and the Levites and the singers, who were the sons of Asaph, who wrote some of the Psalms. The gatekeepers were listed, as were the temple servants and the sons of Solomon's servants. And there were also some who couldn't prove their father's houses nor their descents, whether they actually belonged to Israel, and among them were the sons of Tobiah the Amorite. Well, the priests who couldn't prove their lineage, well, they sought to have their registration among those enrolled in the genealogies, but it was not found there, so they were excluded from the priesthood at that point. And the governor tells them that they're not to partake of the most holy food until a chief priest with the Urim and the Thummim should arrive and could inquire of God for each of them and find out if they were legitimate priests. Just understanding the importance of the holiness of God and who comes before him in that role here. And we're told that the count for the whole assembly together was 42,360, beside the male and the female servants, of whom there were 7,337. And then chapter 7 finishes with mention of those who contributed of their wealth, saying, "Some of the heads of fathers' houses gave to the work. The governor gave to the treasury 1,000 darics of gold, 50 basins, 30 priests' garments, and 500 minas of silver. And some of the heads of fathers' houses gave into the treasury of the work 20,000 darics of gold and 2,200 minas of silver. And what the rest of the people gave was 20,000 darics of gold, 2,000 minas of silver, and 67 priests' garments. So the priests, the Levites, the gatekeepers, the singers, some of the people, the temple servants, and all Israel lived in their towns. And when the seventh month had come, the people of Israel were in their towns." And that, Esther, is how chapter 7 ends.
You're listening to Mission 66, and yes, we're with our teacher, John Matthews, a fantastic explanation of these two chapters in Nehemiah. But I suppose now we can move into the subject, John, of how to know when we're being misled or deceived. So we see here that Governor Nehemiah received these invitations from what I would call some unpleasant characters, to say the least. And somehow he knows that what they're doing was a trick.
Yeah, you're talking about Sanballat, Tobiah and Geshem. And we've seen them before. And so we know Nehemiah knew that they'd already caused trouble for him, tried to hinder the rebuilding of the walls. And so he knows their intentions are not good. And suddenly they call on him for a little meeting. And they don't just call, it's almost desperation. Five times they say, come and have a meeting with us. But Nehemiah sees straight through it. He knows what's going on. And he knew that these people were trouble. And notice they also invite Nehemiah to meet in a village in the plain of Ono. Now, that was a region known for being home to rebellious exiles, a place with a reputation for trouble. So Nehemiah knows if he goes there and meets with them in that context, well, one, he's really vulnerable. But rumours could also spread that he's plotting something, and that could put him in conflict with the Persian Empire. And so he avoids the potential danger to himself, and he avoids the potential for misinformation. Isn't that wisdom?
Oh, absolutely. And once again, his character coming through in that his dealings with them is quite gracious and graceful, if you will. He doesn't treat them in an inhumane way.
No, you're right. He doesn't confront them angrily. He doesn't spark a debate. He just, I guess what we would describe it as, he plays it cool. He denies the accusations, their accusations, that he wanted to be king and it was about him and he wanted to lead this revolution. He replies simply and calmly, no, that's not the case. And no thanks, I don't want to come and meet you. So very, very wise. And I know Jesus says we need to love our enemies, but he also says that we need to be as wise as serpents as well, gentle but wise. And so there is that need for us to be vigilant for the forces of evil that may want to get at us.
So there's another guy who shows up in this narrative, a guy named Shemaiah. And the Bible tells us that he was a prophet, John. So how is it that he would get involved in what we might call a coup attempt, you know, aligning himself with these malicious guys who were actively plotting and scheming against the rebuilding of the wall? Why would he associate himself with them?
Yeah, he'd gone to Shemaiah's house where everything was shut tight, and there he receives this message suggesting that they meet at the temple behind closed doors because someone supposedly wanted to kill him. He immediately knows that this is off, and he doesn't fall for it. And so he's not fooled at all by appearances, even though Shemaiah is a prophet. Nehemiah is rightly on guard.
Okay, so continuing with the narrative, we see now that the wall was finally built, and in record time, might I add, considering the enormity of this project. Now, regarding Nehemiah's enemies and the slander that he, I would say, so bravely resisted multiple times, is opposition a good indicator for us that we're doing something right? Could we make that conclusion?
Sometimes we can. Sometimes we blame opposition actually on things that we've done wrong. So if we do things that we shouldn't be doing and we receive opposition, well, sometimes we deceive ourselves, don't we, and say, well, this is just opposition. This is opposition to doing things that I think is right. But in this context, I think it is true that sometimes we do things, and if God is leading the way and we receive opposition, that's a different kind of opposition. And we know in our heart's heart whether we've surrendered whatever this thing is to God, whatever it might be. And I think it's true that any project of God will face opposition, no doubt about it. It seems that every project, in fact, undertaken by godly people in the Bible, whether it be the Old Testament or the New, it encounters challenges. It is part and parcel of the walk of faith. Think of Moses before Pharaoh, how many times he had to go before him, and Pharaoh had to suffer many plagues before he was finally willing to let the people go. Even then, Pharaoh changes his mind and sends an army after them. And so I think it's true to say that nothing of much eternal value comes without a struggle. But the beauty is that within the struggle is tremendous power for change and peace of mind and freedom of soul.
Oh, yeah. And you know, John, I think an extension to that is just because someone is facing opposition or slander that doesn't automatically mean that they're serving God or they're in right standing with God. Because I think sometimes, you know, people may have enemies because of their own foolish decisions or their reckless behavior.
Yeah, and it's yeah, I alluded to it in that last answer, and you're quite right. You know, somebody might say, well, people just don't like me, you know. Well, maybe the question to then ask is, well, is it something that is abrasive in me or defensive in me? Am I being honest about the things that I know hold me back and stop me being the person that Jesus wants me to become? Maybe a lack of tact, or a lack of compassion, a lack of grace, a lack of humility. Those things often cause conflict in our lives, whether that be at work, at school, at university, at church. And yet people might be like, well, stuff it, take it or leave it. And they may be very quick to blame others for what they're doing wrong. So you're quite right. It's a really perceptive question, actually, that not all our difficulties are signs of faithfully serving God. We might try sometimes to persuade ourselves that they are, but they're not. And sometimes you're right. We bring down trouble on our own heads.
So, John, there's this list of names in chapter 7 of Nehemiah, which kind of reads like a registry office, right? It's this extensive list of names. Talk to me about what the purpose of this documentation or this lengthy record is. Why do we have that?
Yeah, and it's an important list, Esther. And the chapter itself mentions that it was God himself who inspires the action, saying, my God, put it into my heart to assemble the nobles, the officials, and the common people for registration by families. Why? Well, because this is concrete history. It's tangible. It's objective. It endures the history of the nation. Here we are, thousands of years later. It's rock solid history. And the list will look, while you read it, it might not seem useful to us at all, but it was a way that their descendants could prove their lineage. And it holds significance as well, simply for the historical value, the same way that the founding fathers of a nation are remembered.
Well, it's always good to have documentation of where we come from. And I really appreciate you taking us through this, John. Well, to you, listener, please do stay with us, as right now we're going to head into today's summary.
Yeah, and in today's Mission 66, we were in Nehemiah chapter 6 and 7. The theme was high walls against low schemes. Nehemiah, the Judean returning from Persian captivity to rebuild Jerusalem's wall. Well, he was a man of faith, but also a man of tremendous perseverance and focus. He wasn't going to be dissuaded from his main mission. And boy, he had plenty of opportunity to be dissuaded and distracted. And he was faced with problems, people problems, debt, exploitation, opposition from enemies such as Sanballat, Tobiah and Geshem. And yet he, Nehemiah, he remained steadfast in his mission, knowing that this is his life's work, that it's God ordained. And when his enemies attempt to distract him through deceit, and that doesn't work, so they then turn to slander, Nehemiah simply ignores their schemes, and he's polite as he does so. And he trusts God for discernment and strength. And his focus and his vigilance, well, they serve, don't they, as a good model for godly leadership. He avoids distractions. He discerns false prophets, such as Shemaiah. He maintains his integrity despite the temptations to be distracted or even quit. And so, as a result, this wall, remarkably, is completed in just 52 days. And that is, yes, it's a reflection on Nehemiah's faith, but more than that, it's a testament to God's help, divine help, and the people's dedication to God. And then chapter 7, well, that highlights the importance of genealogy and unity, and it lists the people who've returned from exile. And it's a record that preserves the history and the identity of the people, whilst also ensuring the legitimacy of the priests and the leaders. And you know, Nehemiah's story, Esther, it reminds us that God's work will face challenges. But with faith, discernment, and perseverance, we will overcome all obstacles and we will fulfill God's plans. God's plans are sure. They're not derailed. They're not cast aside. They are sure. When God purposes something, it comes to pass. I wonder if God is calling you to something as you listen to Mission 66 today. Stay focused on the heart that he has given you, on what he has placed in your heart. Stay true to that. Say, God, show me what you've already given me. And show me who you want me to reach with what you have given me. He will bring it to pass. Praise his name for that. He is faithful. He is true. His plan and his way for your life is secure. He is sure. He is steadfast. His plan for your life is sure. Keep your eyes on him, and he will lead you on.
Thanks, John, and thank you, friend, for joining us for today's episode. Well, we'll be looking for you here next time, same place, as we go further into the book of Nehemiah, also known as the Wall Builder of Jerusalem. But hey, in the meantime, we do invite you to be a part of our Mission 66 community by liking and commenting on our social media platforms. That's on Facebook and on Instagram. All you need to do is simply search us at Mission 66 and join the Mission 66 conversation today. We're really looking forward to connecting with you. Well, friend, I'm Esther for John and our team saying see you next time. This is Mission 66.
As we close today's program, take a minute to download your free study guide. You'll be able to follow along every single day. Plus, you can engage with the reflection and application questions so you can apply the teaching to your life. It's a great companion resource to the audio Bible teaching of John Matthews and Esther Sisulu. To get your free study guide, visit mission66.org. That's mission66.org. You can also support the ministry of Mission 66 when you visit the site. Your gift makes it possible for this great teaching to be heard in many languages around the world. Mission 66 is a ministry of Transworld Radio in partnership with Dr. Luis Seau.